Good morning. Thank you all for coming. First session, first day. I'm assuming everyone here is motivated and particularly excited about community health workers, which excites me. So, as was mentioned before, my name is Lindsay Riley. I'm going to be talking to you today about the DREAM Project, which is a randomized controlled trial community health worker intervention to improve diabetes management in the New York City Bangladeshi community. Oh, how I wish I had financial disclosures. But I don't, alas, I do not. So learning objectives today, I'm gonna talk briefly about sort of the community that we're working with for this particular intervention, give a short overview of the project and sort of some of the development and history of the project, give you some background on sort of our study design and methods that we've elected to implement, and then most importantly, probably talk about some of our findings as well as what some of the implications of those findings are. So before I move on, I wanted to give a brief sort of background on the organization that's responsible for this body of work that I'm from, which is the NYU Center for the Study of Asian American Health, which, because it's much easier to say, we refer to as CESA, also because we love acronyms like other good public health practitioners. Established in 2003, CESA was based out of an NIH Project Export Center grant. And it's the only center of its kind in the country that's devoted solely to research and evaluation on Asian American health disparities. So at the work of the center, heavily relies on our sort of broad network of community organizations, community leaders, as well as cooperation with other academic medical centers and healthcare institutions and clinics that we work with. And all of those partners work together, as I mentioned, in this network to help identify what the health priorities are for different Asian American communities and reduce health disparities amongst these communities. So today I'm going to be discussing the DREAM Project, which is the intervention that I'm involved with. So from the title slide, we've already gleaned that we're working with the Bangladeshi community, so it's no surprise. But although we consider sort of this estimate that I've put up here to be a drastic underestimate of the community in the New York City area, census puts it the size of the community at around 64,000. We also know from both census estimates and our own formative work that we've done at CESA that this is a largely an immigrant community, with 74% being foreign-born, and that limited English proficiency tends to be high, particularly higher than some of the other Asian American communities that we work with at 54%. So these are some of the key sort of background demographic characteristics that impact this community's ability to not only access but utilize care, as well as to take advantage of some of the other sort of mainstream health education efforts that might be available to them in the variety of clinic settings that they're accessing care in. So despite the fact that diabetes is a major health issue in the country of origin, there are very few studies that document the rates of diabetes amongst Bangladeshis in the U.S. We know from studies of immigrants in the U.K. and Canada in this community that there are much more higher rates of diabetes compared to the general population, and that the very few community-based studies that have been implemented in the U.S. That do exist document prevalence rates in the range of 20 to 30%, so very high for this particular community. So to help inform the development and implementation of this particular intervention, we undertook a formative study in 2009 that included a detailed community assessment, as well as a series of descriptive focus groups. And I won't go into that too much, but I've included the citation if anyone is interested in learning more about the results of that community assessment. And this sort of formative work was really guided not only by a Project CHW, who I'll talk more about, but our community coalition that was formulated for this project. So I guess suffice it to say from this slide that some of our kind of key findings from the formative work were that we came across a bevy of misinformation about the causes of diabetes among community members, and as well as issues around sort of food and resource availability in the U.S. as compared to the country of origin, and how these factors really impacted or underscored issues with diabetes management practices among this particular community. So based on the findings from this formative work, and with support from NIH and CDC funding, we developed the DREAM Project, which stands, again, the acronym, for Diabetes Research, Education, and Action for Minorities, with the overall goal and intent of the project to develop, implement, and test the efficacy of a CHW intervention that we would design to improve diabetes control and management in this particular community. So the design of the DREAM project is guided by two models, one being community-based participatory research, which we already heard a lot about in a previous presentation, so I won't go into too much. And that of the CHW model, which again, I know there are a lot of excited and enthusiastic CHW supporters in the room, so I won't go into too much detail as well. But suffice it to say that we find at the center that these are models that are incredibly complementary and that are really effective ways to engage with Asian American communities, which tend to be otherwise underrepresented in sort of large aggregated data sets, as well as in health disparities work in general. So as I mentioned previously, in navigating sort of what becomes that delicate balance between scientific or academic interest and those interests of the community, we elected to create a community coalition that would ensure that folks had appropriate representation throughout the research process. And this helped us tremendously in the early stages of the research to ensure that the intervention was not only culturally and linguistically relevant, but to date that our coalition continues to be an active and valuable component of what we consider to be the success of our intervention. So getting down to sort of the nitty-gritty about our study and who we're working with, as I previously mentioned, our study population is the Bangladeshi community of New York City, and those are individuals that have a confirmed type 2 diabetes diagnosis. Upon enrollment, all participants receive an introductory group session, which we kind of term as a diabetes 101 class. And if they're, we then subsequently randomize the group. So if they're enrolled into a treatment group, they receive four additional educational sessions that focus on a variety of topics related to diabetes management, so physical activity, nutrition, stress management, complications of diabetes, as well as two one-on-one visits with a community health worker. And those one-on-one visits are really opportunities for our CHWs to assist participants with individualized care plans, particularly using motivational interviewing techniques to do goal setting around their self-management issues or goals, as well as provide any requisite or necessary social service referrals or address any issues that folks might have with healthcare access or utilization. Control group participants, as I mentioned, they receive that sort of diabetes 101 introductory session, and then they're later invited in a subsequent cohort to participate in that full intervention, so the additional four group sessions and one-on-one visits. So that's a way that we can ensure that control group participants get something for serving as a study control for 6 months. Another important note about our study design is that our CHWs, like some of the other projects that we've heard about today, are hired and actually supervised by the study team at New York School of Medicine, so they're all, or New York University School of Medicine, so they're all NYU full-time employees. This allows us to not only tap into and partner with a variety of different sort of hospital and clinic-based resources, but also to ensure that we obtain a large representative sample of this very diverse community in New York City. So our community health workers employ a multi-pronged recruitment strategy when we're doing our recruitment for this particular intervention. And that includes not only tabling at some of our clinic partner sites, doing sort of mailings and phone follow-up, but also a robust partnership with local ethnic Bangladeshi newspapers. And that was really identified in some of the formative work that we did that I mentioned in a previous slide, which identified ethnic media to be a very important purveyor of health information for this particular community. So we use sort of news articles or articles about some of our project activities to not only highlight and legitimize the role of the project in the community, but also to sort of bolster recognition of some of the efforts that we're working on and to increase awareness of the health issue in the community in general. So after collecting the formative information that I noted in a previous slide, we actually piloted the intervention in 2011. And we've subsequently implemented the program or intervention in four separate cohorts. So just an important note, unlike some other CHW interventions, we don't do rolling enrollment. We recruit a group, we follow them for 6 months, recruit another group, follow them for 6 months. So the good part. So since 2011, we've been able to screen 389 individuals for participation in the intervention, and we've enrolled 157 to date. So the findings I'll be presenting today and some of the subsequent slides will include complete data on those that weren't discontinued or lost to follow-up, which is an N of about 127. So our study endpoints are collected at baseline, 3 month, and 6 month. We also do a 12-month study follow-up with our treatment group participants to obtain some longer-term follow-up data, which we're still in the process of collecting, so I haven't included that in our results today. So despite not being engaged much with the control group for that 6 month study period, we have been able to maintain fairly high data collection rates in both groups, somewhere in the 76 to 88% range for either group. I will note that the most common reasons for some of the loss of follow-up that we incurred include extended travel to the country of origin, which we encounter a lot, as well as illness. So when we look at retention in our treatment group specifically, we do see that session attendance does decline over time, which any of you that work in CHW programs probably come up against this a lot. However, we define receipt of the intervention as 4 out of the 5 educational sessions and 1 of the 2 CHW visits, and that rate is about 70%, which we consider to be a success or a programmatic success. Some of the most common reasons for non-attendance that we've incurred in the project include conflict with work schedules, particularly because for some of our male subgroup, we're working with a taxi driver and individuals that work in the restaurant industry, which there's a lot of conflicts with those work schedules in particular. And for some of our female participants who tend to be the primary caregivers in their families, not only for children, but for in-laws and extended family members, we have a hard time, you know, bringing them because of their responsibilities at home. And likewise, extended travel to the sort of country of origin we ran up against. So to give you sort of a demographic background on the group that we're working with for this particular intervention, about 2/3 of our study sample is male, which is consistent not only with the size of the community in New York City, but as well as sort of the clinical profile of diabetes. The mean age at baseline for our participants is about 54 years old. So in terms of years in the U.S., although more than a quarter of our study has been in the U.S. for less than 5 years, the mean for both treatment and control groups is about 13 years. And this is consistent with what we know about sort of the immigration patterns for this particular sending country. It's consistent with sort of some of the larger national data sets that I mentioned before, our rates of limited English proficiency are around 57% for our study. So I'm happy to report some of our preliminary findings, one being that we did see a demonstrated statistically significant improvement in self-reported physical activity for our intervention at the 6 month study time point. So what we found in both the treatment and control group that there were very low self-reported physical activity rates at baseline, very, very low. For some participants, it was 0 reported physical activity. And my colleague Laura is going to talk about this particular outcome in more detail in the next program or presentation, so I won't go into that too much detail. Another outcome that I want to briefly touch upon is a particular aspect of sort of behavior change around food and nutrition. Given what we know about rice is not only important, but what's considered to be a staple food for this particular community, we determined very early on in the development of this project that it would be impractical and unrealistic for us to attempt to instruct participants to eliminate rice because of its effect on glycemic control for diabetes. So instead, throughout our intervention, our curriculum and our community health workers emphasized the behavioral strategy of switching from white to brown rice, as well as exercising portion control. And our survey findings indicate that we do see a modest but significant increase of self-reported consumption of brown rice. Another important finding that we consider to be in strong support of sort of our overall program goal is a demonstrated improvement in self-reported knowledge of what hemoglobin A1C is, which we heard from our last presenter, the background. As I previously mentioned, both our treatment and control group receives an introductory or a diabetes 101 session. Where we actually introduce this concept. What is it? Why should you care about it? What does it mean in terms of your overall management? So why is this particular outcome important? Well, what our CHWs frequently encountered among community members is that participants would say, oh, my doctor says I'm fine, or I'm doing okay, which would then be interpreted by community members that we met as, you know, I'm doing okay so I can take less medication, or I don't have to take any medication at all, which any of you that are CHWs in the room may have also encountered. So by teaching what A1C is and what the scale of A1C should be, we were able to determine with individuals what an appropriate A1C goal should be for each person. And then we were able to sort of empower them to be a more active player in their own diabetes management. So asking your doctor, what is my A1C this visit? Is it higher or is it lower? And that gives people sort of a frame of reference of how they're doing. So in terms of clinical findings, our treatment group demonstrates a modest yet significant reduction in weight and BMI, as well as systolic blood pressure, which we're very happy about. Although we have not seen significant improvements in A1C, you will notice that our sample has a relatively low baseline A1C to begin with, around 7.5 to be specific for our treatment group. And most clinical guidelines or practitioners will advise that 7 to 7.5 is doing okay, if you will, or considered to be managed even. So we're not working with individuals that are necessarily coming in with really high A1Cs. In terms of sort of programmatic successes, to date we've given over 125 educational sessions in a variety of clinic and community-based settings. So some of these photos are from wonderful, you know, clinic-based conference rooms. Others are in the basements of restaurants or the back room of a community partner, where basically wherever we can give the session and wherever we can get people to come, that's where we teach. Perhaps most importantly, the lessons learned beyond sort of the graphs and the numbers and some of the clinical findings, what we consider to be some of the key takeaways, particularly the second bullet, which I put in italics. So considering what we like to be a commitment to CBPR principles when undertaking this research, this is something that we come up against a lot. So, you know, for instance, the communities and coalitions that we work with made it very clear from the outset that everyone that participates should get something. So that led to our decision to give that sort of diabetes 101 or introductory session, which in some cases that's enough to motivate behavior change. And we've seen that in some of the other slides, that even our control group will demonstrate positive impact in behavioral outcomes, which makes within group differences sometimes very difficult, or demonstrating within group differences, between group differences. So despite what might be a challenge of sort of some of the scientific rigor of our design, we felt it important to sort of hold up our end of the bargain and giving this particular community something to take away, even if they're randomized to a control group. Also to note, I mentioned before, we work with individuals in service sectors, particularly taxi worker industry and restaurant industry, which is an ongoing challenge just to navigate work schedules to bring people in for sessions and one-on-one visits. So to address these issues, we continue to develop strategies, and these include having flexible class times. So sometimes we'll do classes at 9 o'clock at night or even later, so that we can bring those folks in that might otherwise miss the session and miss the information. So in terms of next steps, we're currently recruiting and enrolling at our next recruitment site, which is another large HUC hospital in Queens, New York. We're also revising, always revising, as one of the other presenters mentioned, evaluate, evaluate, evaluate. So we're always revising our curriculum and sort of what we can do better. And this includes including some new information about stress management as well as weight management, which has come up a lot in the course of our implementation as issues related to diabetes that our community needs help with or more assistance with. And lastly, we're currently working on developing a culturally tailored physical activity DVD that women could use in the home setting. And this was proposed as a strategy to increase physical activity as a result of our study findings. Many of the women that we work with in this community are largely Muslim, and therefore, because of cultural and religious norms, experience several barriers to engaging in physical activity outside of the home. I guess I just wanted to echo Farah's comments earlier about without them, there would be no us. So at the bottom, you'll see photos of our wonderful community health workers who are represented here today, Gulmahar Alam, MD Tahir, and Mamnoon Al-Haq. And lastly, just wanted to thank them. They couldn't be here, as well as our staff, my other study co-authors, as well as our community partners and our coalition. Thank you.